Ramsey TV.
Don't like my gap theory, huh? You don't like my gap theory? Well, I got a gap theory for you. Right here. Right in your top row of teeth. I'll give you a gap theory. Right in the old kisser. No, I'm not a violent person. Not at all. But my gap theory is not a theory. God has many gaps, inspired gaps, that he puts into the word. Let's review. In a beginning created by the Elohim were the heavens and the earth, yet the earth became a chaos and vacant. In between the creation and the chaos and vacant, there's a gap. Jesus Christ and John the Baptist say, near is the kingdom. Near is the kingdom. And the kingdom will be fulfilled. But between the kingdom being pronounced and fulfilled, there's a gap. Jesus Christ takes the scroll of Isaiah in Nazareth and stops in the middle of a sentence, an inspired stop. There's a gap between declaring the favorable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance. Fascinating, yes? Making room for what? The announcement of the Apostle Paul, the gospel of the Apostle Paul that has come to the nations on the heels of Israel's apostasy. This is Martin Zender. Welcome to MZTV. Once again, another scriptural extravaganza from the edge of the bottom of the Florida Peninsula. I failed to tell you on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday that you really need to see, if you haven't already, the Martin Zender Rodney Paris special that we published on Sunday. If you haven't seen that yet, I'll have my sister put the link down there again today. It's from a talk I gave in Toronto. I gave a series of three talks in Toronto in 2001 after the publication of my first book, How to Quit Church Without Quitting God. And 9/11 had just happened, like 2 months before. This was November of 2001. And I had a friend back then, haven't heard from this guy in over 20 years, by the name of George Opik. And he had rented a hall in Toronto. And he had dreams and visions of putting flyers all over the city and having this auditorium filled. Well, he did put flyers all over the city. He asked me to design a flyer, and I did. I had pictures of the World Trade Center smoking, you know, having been struck by the airplanes on that fateful day, and that an evangelist would be coming to town teaching of the purpose of evil. Well, I had brought a contingent from Ohio, and a few of my friends from Canada came, but the anticipated crowd never developed. And George was really disappointed. I could just see my friend George. He just sank in disappointment. And I said, George, everybody that's supposed to be here is supposed to be here. This is the way God works. And I'm telling you, I don't think that these talks have ever been published. All of the other talks you've heard from over 20 years ago that I gave, that I put on cassette tapes that Rodney has digitized and put video to and text frames to, doing a wonderful job of that. All the other videos you've seen have, those audio tapes had been published before, but I don't think these Toronto tapes have ever seen the light of day. So I listened to this one on Sunday, and I'm telling you, if I may say so, I mean, I was on fire. I was inspired. Which makes me really happy because it proves to me what I already know, that I would give the same passion, the same truth to a crowd of two as I would a crowd of 2002. Makes no difference to me. Really, it makes no difference to me. And I proved it at this meeting in Toronto. It is so good. And I really want you to watch this video. Rodney put a lot of work into it, and it's excellent. And then he tagged on a video at the end that really took me by surprise. He took one of my MZTV shows from 2019, or maybe it was 2018, called The Fine Print on God's Contract. I forgot all about this video. And it is really good. I'm watching this in the third person. It's like I'm not watching myself. It's like I'm watching another person doing this. I'm amazed that God is saying these things through the vessel that is Martin Zender. It's so not of me. It's so inspired by God that I can actually look at these things and listen to these things as so removed and getting blessing from it myself. It's just a remarkable thing. And it really tells me that I do, in a way, disassociate myself from these things. So of God is it that I can watch myself and like be blessed and like, wow, that's great. That makes sense. And I minister to myself. That sounds bizarre. It sounds arrogant. I don't know. It sounds bad, but I don't know how it sounds. Well, yes, I guess I do know how it sounds. But to me, it's perfect. It makes perfect sense because it's a God thing and it's tremendous. And God keeps doing it. And as I've told you, maybe some of you haven't heard this, there's no show or no talk I ever give, no show I ever make that is ever automatic. Never, never. I never get on a roll where I assume that I'm just going to turn on the camera, turn on the microphone, and everything's going to go great. I never, never expect that to happen. Every single time I turn on this microphone, I am praying to God to help me to make sense, to bring a blessing to you, to minister to you, to bring words of life, of comfort, of truth. And God keeps doing it. But I never think he's going to do it tomorrow. I mean, I kind of hope he will, and I pray he will, and he seems to be on a roll. God's on the roll, not me. God's on a roll. And I'm thinking, hey, as long as he's using me for this roll, I'll keep doing it. Roll, R-O-L-L, and you could say R-O-L-E. I'll keep doing it. As long as he gives us strength and the power and the courage and the desire. And so far, he has. But it's never easy. Never. I never sit down here knowing how it's going to go, assuming it's going to be a great show. Never. I need you to know that. Every show is a miracle. No show is ever taken for granted. And none of you are ever taken for granted. I am so thankful for every single person watching this show. It could all go away tomorrow. God could take all my gifts away tomorrow. I mean, as far as my gifts in transferring this information to you, making the complicated simple, giving it to you in a way that you can understand it. I realize that that could go away anytime. I just feel like I'm always on the edge. That's why I say I'm on the edge of the bottom of the Florida Peninsula. That's true geographically, and it's true spiritually, and it's true emotionally. It's just true of me, period. I'm on the edge, I feel, all the time. Which is good, because it ensures that every show, that I give everything on every show. I don't cut corners. I'm praying, God, please let me say something to help people. Please use me to get these things across to you. Just a little personal insight there into how this thing happens. I don't really know exactly how it happens. So unsure am I how it happens that I'm aware that it could be taken away anytime. There's no formula. There's only a hanging on to the ragged edge of revelation and of teaching. So thank you for hanging in there with me all these years. And by the grace of God, I will keep doing this. I feel homeless at heart. I guess this is part of the beauty of what God has made me, is that I don't even take it for granted that I have a roof over my head. I'm always afraid that I'm going to be found out down here. It's like, I'm living in Florida. It's like, I don't belong here. How can I, a guy from Ohio, be living in Florida? It's like all these people are like cool and sophisticated and hip. They're Floridians, and I'm always afraid I'm going to be found out, and they're going to ship me out of here. Wait a minute. you don't belong here. What are you doing here? Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. You finally found me out, and I'm going to be shipped out of here. So as soon as I moved down here, I started looking for places where I could be homeless. There's a certain appeal to me. As you know, for the first 3.5 years I lived here, I lived in a laundry room. My landlady, Juliana, I booked 2 weeks in her home as an Airbnb, and I was going to book those 2 weeks in order to find a less expensive place to live because it was a little expensive, like for 2 weeks. I'm like, I can't pay this. So I was going to use it as a headquarters and look to other Airbnb situations where I could live with people, rent a room in a house, something to keep the expenses low. But I found Juliana so wonderful that I thought to myself, I got to figure out a way to stay here. I saw her laundry room, and she was telling me, someday, Martin, I'm going to make this into a proper rental room. I said, I took that to heart, and I said, maybe I can figure out a way to live cheap. And sure enough, one day I suggested to her, it's like, hey, how would you like to not have to change this room at all and rent it? She goes, what do you mean? I'm willing to live here in this laundry room to sleep here. It'll be my room just for 8 hours. The rest of the time, it's a public room. I'll just sit here on this futon and I'll do my work. I'll write. From 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., it'll be my room. I'll close the door, put a black piece of paper on the door, and I'll make my show in the morning, sleep, whatever. She said, okay, how many people can live in Florida for $300 a month? I did that for 3.5 years, and I loved it. But I didn't even count on that, and I'm always scouting around looking for, even now, even today, I'm looking around for places I could be homeless. Why hasn't anybody ever thought of living on top of a bus stop? Nobody ever looks up there. So I'm thinking, I could like climb up there and like put my sleeping bag up there and nobody would ever see me on top of the bus stop. I also found a row of hedges out on the, where is that? On 17th Street, the Harbor Shops. There's a row of hedges and there's about a 3.5 foot gap between the hedge and a wall. And I figured there's a perfect spot to put like a sleeping bag or a little mini tent and I could live there and I could still join a gym for $30 a month and I could use that to work out and take a shower and then I could write at a coffee shop. I'd probably need a car because I need to record my show so I could record my show in my car. I'm always thinking these things. And folks, I think I would be an excellent dumpster diver. People make fun of me all the time because I eat food off the floor. I mean, the 5-second rule is ridiculous. To me, it's like a 5-hour rule. And so, you see, my I have an innate immunity that's very strong because I don't ever try to protect myself from microbes or germs or bacteria. I just let myself suck it all up, and it makes me strong. And so, I wouldn't hesitate to eat food out of a dumpster. I would be very good at it. It would be a real challenge to me to know which restaurants throw out what food at certain times. There's so much food wasted in this country. I would really be great. Oh, did you hear the story? I told this story 2 years ago, probably. Many of you probably have not heard it. I was going on a run early in the morning, and I usually go out before the sun comes up, so it's darkish. Sun's maybe starting to come up. And I'm at the corner of 17th Street and Federal Highway where there's a lot of homeless people. So I'm standing at the light waiting to cross. And this homeless guy looks down at me. I guess it's kind of light out. And he sees my socks. And my socks, I wear the same pair of socks over and over and over and over again on my runs. I just will wear my socks out. They have holes in them. These socks I was wearing were like ripped from the heel almost up to the top. And this homeless guy saw them. And he goes, dude, I always talk to the homeless people. I feel a kinship with them. He said, dude, you need a new pair of socks. I said, yeah, whatever. He says, no, here, I have a pair of socks. So a real point of pride with me is that a homeless guy gave me a pair of socks. That's really funny. A homeless guy. And I accepted it. I said, thanks. I can really use this. So homeless people are giving me clothes down here. That's the state of affairs. So that's a beautiful thing. So I'm having this homeless mentality in that I take nothing for granted. I feel like I could be, it's not that my landlady, Juliana, would do this, but I just feel like every day that I'm living in South Florida is a blessing. And of course, I hold on to everything loosely. As I've taught you for many years now, in 1 Corinthians 7, Paul says, you know, hold loosely to all things. Let those who have wives be as not having them. Let those who are buying not be retaining. Let those who are using the world as not using it up. In other words, hold loosely to everything. Hold loosely to people. Hold loosely to things. Don't strangle people. Don't strangle relationships. Realize that every day is a gift of God, and every person in your life is a gift. Even my kids, I knew, were on loan to me from God, and I never took them for granted, and I enjoyed every day. And I'm so thankful today that I knew the good old days while they were happening. Many people look back and say, oh, those were the good old days. And they wish they could go back and realize that they were the good old days while they were living them. Well, God gave me the blessing of realizing that I was living the good old days. And so I just felt privileged every day. And I feel the same way with you. I feel privileged every day that you're listening. I don't take it for granted that you're going to listen tomorrow. Every day is new. Every show is a new challenge. Every show is a new prayer. Pray to God to help me. I pray to God every show, please help me. And as you know, everything's thrown together here. I have like three lines of notes. These are my notes for like the shows this week. I mean, it's just very sketchy. And most of it is improvised off the cuff. I don't know how it happens. Some kind of miracle. But I'm thankful to God for it. And again, as always, I'm thankful to God for you. So speaking of being strangers in a strange land. Oh, by the way, I have befriended a homeless guy named Mike. He's been on the street for, I think, 12 years. And I told him one day, I said, and I help him out once in a while, you know, give him some money for cigarettes and coffee. I love these homeless people who hold up the signs and say, need money for cigarettes or need money for beer. It's like, yes, you're honest. These folks aren't trying to find work. If you offered them a job, they wouldn't take it. This is their job. They're just trying to maintain another day on the street. This is their chosen lifestyle. And I told Mike one day, I said, dude, you beat the system. You're living your own life. I mean, I know it's not the greatest, but Mike, if Mike was offered a job, he wouldn't take it. This is his life. This is his world. And I told him, I said, dude, you beat the system. He doesn't have to pay taxes. He doesn't have to pay insurance. He doesn't have to. There's a lot of things the guy doesn't have to worry about, actually. I mean, he has his own worries. How he's going to stay dry for the night. But he's got his spots. I said, where are you sleeping these days? I'm sleeping under the bank. Oh, is that a good spot? I'm making notes under the bank. Which bank? Oh, the bank on 17th and 8th. Okay, got it. Yeah, okay. I'm making notes. Is it dry? Okay. Making notes. You never know. You never know. And I read in Hebrews, getting to the scriptures now, of those people of God who consider themselves to be expatriates, to be foreigners in a foreign land. And I completely feel that way. And I know you do as well. And I know you're going to dig this message. Saying, yes, that's me. I don't belong here. What am I doing here? How can I survive another day here? I know, I'm thinking the same thing. I'm thinking that if this eon goes on another like 2 years, how in the world am I going to survive? It's like, I can't stand it. I told you the other day about the young people who man the cash registers of America. They can't even talk, can't even look at you. They're just totally defeated. I don't know what's wrong with them. But then I think to myself, well, at least they have jobs. At least they're working. That's true. I should have mentioned that the other day. At least they're working. God bless them for that. I complain about too much stuff. I really do. Pathetic, actually. But then, My excuse is Romans 8. All creation is groaning for the manifestation of the sons of God. We ourselves are groaning within ourselves. Yeah, for the change to come. And so, okay, Paul says we're groaning. So I guess my complaining is a form of groaning. I'm just not comfortable here. And it shocks me how anybody can be grooving on this earth, how anybody can get used to this and to be somehow flying high. And I look around and I say, is everybody enjoying this life except me? Am I the only oddball that wants to get out of here? But as our friend Henry David Thoreau said, men everywhere live lives of quiet desperation. No, they're all desperate, but a lot of them are faking it. Some of them fake it better than others. But I'm with you. I'm not. Don't know how I'm going to make it. It's the grace of God every single day. So let's go to Hebrews chapter 11. I know I've run this verse past you before, but I'm always seeing new things here. I love this verse. Paul says in verse 13 of Hebrews 11, he's just named the heroes of faith, those heroes in Israel, the people they all looked up to. One thing they all had in common is they died having not received the promises. And as I told you earlier this week, Hebrews was written to those Israelites who saw the kingdom draw near and then saw it pulled out from under them, asked the big question, what happened? Paul's explained to them what happened. And he's encouraging them, stay true to the promises. Here's all these people, Abraham, Sarah, Noah, Enoch, Abel, they all died having not received the promises. They waited for a city having foundations whose artificer and architect is God. And here we go. Verse 13, in faith died all these, not being requited with the promises. I'm not saying we're going to die. No, we're going to be those people who are changed while alive. We shall not all die, Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, but we shall all be changed. We're not going to all die. It's my firm belief that we are of the generation that shall not see death. But in faith died all of these, not being requited with the promises, but perceiving them ahead. That is, perceiving the promises ahead and saluting them and avowing that they are strangers and expatriates on the earth. Boy, that is me. There's a transadministrational truth here. Strangers on the earth. Folks, I'm sure that many of you think it would be just paradise living in South Florida. I mean, I live 2.5 miles from the beach. And yes, it's nice to know the beach is there. And I do go up to Blondie's on Thursday with Manford, drive past the beach. I run past the beach. It's all very beautiful. But there is nothing so appealing on this planet that would want me to stay here for another minute if I heard the voice of Christ, the chief messenger, calling me out of here. I'm ready. And even as I see the people frolicking on the beach, or even if as I'm at the bar shooting pool with Manfred, I look at the people drinking, and not that I'm averse to drink, of course, you know I'm not, but even as I'm doing it, it doesn't satisfy me. But the people I'm looking at seem to be camped on it. They seem to be enjoying it. And I'm wondering, how do these people do it? What did they have that I don't have? Oh, it's this. They're not expatriates upon the earth. They're not seeking a different country. They're not seeking a different city. They're satisfied with this one. They're not craving something better. Here's verse 16 of Hebrews 11. Yet now they are craving a better, that is, a celestial. Wherefore God is not ashamed of them to be invoked as their God, for he makes ready for them a city. This ain't my city. I mean, of all the cities in the United States, I prefer this one, Fort Lauderdale. But it, not even Vacationland USA, satisfies me. So please, let no one think that I'm down here cruising. I'm not. I wish I could be. I wish I knew how to be that. I don't. I see other people doing it every day, or at least they appear to be doing it. They're probably not, but they look like they are. I don't know how to do it. I can't be happy. It bothers me some days. I can't be content here. I'll never forget my brother-in-law. This was, 30 years ago. We were at his grandfather's house, and his grandfather had this dog in the back. And the dog was kept outside all the time. The dog was in a doghouse. Why they had this dog, I don't know. And the dog was on a short chain. It was really pitiful. And my brother-in-law, Matt, said, "Man, I really feel sorry for that dog on that short chain." And I looked at him. I said, "Well, you better start feeling sorry for yourself." He said, "What do you mean?" He says, and I said, "You don't realize what a chain we're on. Only when we're changed, made in the likeness of God, will we realize just how freaking short our chain was, how stultified our existence was, how limited we were this whole time." But the problem is with me is I realize it now. So see, realizing things while they're happening has a negative aspect too. I talked earlier about the positive aspect, realizing when I was raising my kids and I was married, happily married, raising my kids in Ohio, realizing these were the good old days. Likewise, I have the gift of realizing what a bondage I'm in, what a short leash I'm on, and how dangerous and treacherous and disappointing and depressing this world is and this life is. I'm with you in that boat. I really am. I shouldn't be. I look around me. I'm living in this beautiful place, but I can't escape it. I'm an expatriate. I'm a stranger in a strange land, and I'm avowing that I'm a stranger and an expatriate upon the earth. And I'm craving a better. I am craving a celestial city. And God looks at this. He looks at me, he looks at you, and he sees this suffering, he sees this angst. And it's not that we don't appreciate what he's done for us, because I do. I appreciate every day that I have food, that you're out there for me, that Manfred's here, that Phil is not far away. I'm thankful every day for that. But at the same time, it's not enough for me. I look around, and as I've always said to you, this is the planet that crucified Christ. That's what the world thinks of Christ. It's the same planet. I'm on the same earth that has soaked up the blood of the Son of God. It's the same earth. It's the same system. It's the same eon. And I hate it. I hate it. But God sees that, and I think he's pleased. I'm not sure he always likes it when I bitch so much, but I think it would be worse if God saw that I was comfortable and cozy and just making friends with the world, hoping that he would delay his coming so I could fulfill my hopes and dreams here on this planet. But no, God knows my heart, and he knows your heart. We're all in the same boat, and it is only the Spirit of God that can make you feel this way, because we're surrounded by people who don't feel this way. We're surrounded by people who are friends with the world. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't get it.